The reading is taken this morning from Ruth chapter 2 and can be found in the Pew Bible on page 268. Ruth meets Boaz. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they called back. Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" The foreman replied, "She is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi." She said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters." She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with my servant girls. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you, and whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with the people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord," she said. "You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls." At mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Even if she gathers among the sheaves, don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she'd gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she'd left over after she'd eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz," she said. "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead," she added. "The man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers." Then Ruth the Moabitess said, "He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'" Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the servant, girls of Boaz, to glean until the barley and wheat harvests were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law.
Thank you, Geraldine. Just want to mention the beautiful flowers today that Alan Bell has provided, because it's Lucy's anniversary, isn't it? 11 years, we were saying. And doesn't feel like 11 years. Sounds a lot, doesn't it? But we still miss people and remember people and celebrate people. This story is an old story that we're looking at today, the story of Ruth, and we began it last week. And I don't know if you remember, but it began with a famine. They lived in Bethlehem. A famine came along. Elimelech and his family left to go to Moab, which was on the east coast of the Dead Sea, a foreign place, a place where Israelites wouldn't choose to go normally, but they went. Elimelech and his two sons, who had married Moabite women, died. So it was a tragic kind of a story. So we find Ruth and her two daughters-in-law, not Ruth, Naomi, and her two daughters-in-law. I keep getting them mixed up. Orpah and Ruth, the three of them left alone. And what are they going to do? But then they hear that there is good times back in Bethlehem. Naomi decides to head back, tells her daughter-in-laws to stay where they belong, go back to their home. They're still young enough to get married again. Why would they come to a foreign country? She urges them to stay. One of them, Orpah, decides to stay. Ruth clings to her and says those wonderful words, "I will go where you go. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. Nothing's going to separate from me from you, except death." And so they head back to Bethlehem, but they have nothing. So chapter 1 begins with a famine. It ends with the beginning of the barley harvest. So it's almost like a picture of their lives, from bad to things are getting okay. Naomi comes back into town. She says, "Don't call me Naomi, call me Mara, because that means bitter." The name Naomi meant pleasant or sweet, but life had not been pleasant or sweet for her. So she says, "Call me Mara," which means bitter. That's the way her life had been. Maybe that we can resonate with that. We look at life and think, life is hard. Life has been hard. So that's the way it was. So where's it going to go to? We come to chapter 2, which is act 2 of a great love story, because this is a love story. And one of the main characters, Boaz, is about to enter the scene. Verse 1, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. It's a great name, isn't it? It's a very solid, trustworthy name, Boaz. But who is he? Well, very soon we're going to find out. But for the moment, this just tells us something about him. He's an important person. He's an influential person. He's a wealthy person, a man of standing. But most importantly of all, he is related to Elimelech, Naomi's husband. He's from that same family, and that is going to be really important for the rest of this book. Verse 2, "And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, 'Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor.'" So as you read the Old Testament, the book of Leviticus, the book of Deuteronomy, you find God's provision for the poor. And so it was, if some wealthy people had all these fields and they were harvesting the fields, the law said, you must not take every grain. You must leave the bits around the edges. Don't harvest it all, but harvest the main bit. But all the bits around the edges, you're to leave for the poor to come along and pick up. Times of no social security, but this was God's provision for the poor. And that's what Ruth was about to do. She went off to find fields in which she, a Moabite, it's a bit like she was an illegal immigrant into this country. She's a foreigner. But she was going to go do some gleaning. What does that have to say to us in the situation we find ourselves in today? Ruth had an uncertain future. She didn't know what it was going to look like. She was a foreigner living in a foreign land. She has no husband. She has no children. That is bad in this society. She's got no material possessions. The future looks really uncertain. Her position is very precarious. But it says with courage, she sets off to see what she can do. Do you remember it said she had made the God of Israel her God? And so she sets off. She strides off with courage. Not simply in her own strength, but because she had made the God of Israel her God. And that's what we are doing as well. Every day, every hour, our situation in our world changes. We don't know what the future holds. We don't know where it's all going to lead to. But the one thing we know is that we have made the God of Israel our God. And we can stride into the future, not in our own strength, but in His, trusting Him for whatever the future will bring. Verse 2 to 3, Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. And as it turned out, that's a lovely phrase, isn't it? As luck would have it, where is she? Well, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. The love story is all coming together. If you're watching this on TV, it all seems so predictable. Here's Ruth, the widow. Here is Boaz, the rich, influential person. And as luck would have it, she finds herself in his field. That's what it says. But was it luck? Did she just stumble into his field by accident? Nothing in God's plan is an accident. Good things, bad things, but nothing is an accident. God's plans are deeply sophisticated. We kind of see God's plan in 2D, or maybe 3D if we're lucky. But God's plans are deep, set before the beginning of time, for His glory, for the end of time. And in the midst of all that, God is working. So do you think Ruth ended up in this field by accident? No, she didn't. And it wasn't just to make it a nice love story, but there was something bigger at work. No, this is a God at work in the life of a woman of God who had committed herself to the God of Israel. You can see it in her character. You can hear it in the words that she says. God is with her. And what kind of man is Boaz? Well, you know the way we sometimes say first impressions are lasting impressions. Got to make a good first impression. You never get a second chance to make a first impression. So what are our first impressions of Boaz? We first hear him in verse 4. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. What did he say? Did he say, "Would you hurry up and get a bit more work done? You're a lazy bunch. I'm going to get the whip out." No, he said, "The Lord be with you." And they called back to him, "The Lord bless you." This wasn't just a greeting. This wasn't just something that you say. This was real. So you get a picture of who Boaz is by the words that he uses. Isn't that the case with all of us? This is a man of God. You can see it, hear it in the grace of his words. We encounter all sorts of people in our lives, don't we? Grumpy people, demanding people, especially bosses. Selfish people, but not Boaz. He was not like that. And his workers responded in a similar fashion to him. And isn't that often what happens? You know, if someone speaks kindly to us or encouraging to us or something that brings out the best in people. I suppose this story's got something to say about the importance of our relationships within a work environment, whatever that work environment might be. So what does your work life look like? Whatever that might look like for you. Is it a place where your love for God is reflected in the words you use and in your persona, in your attitude? For how we work, how we treat people. The values that we promote is all really important. And shining the light of Jesus, the good news of Jesus, in the lives of others. Ultimately, as Paul said in his letter to the Colossians, whatever you do, whether in word or deed, whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. So Boaz is a respected man. His character rubs off on his workers. Isn't that great? And this is the picture you get from his first words, and it unfolds as you get to know more about the character. Boaz knows his workers really well, and he walks into the field, and immediately he can see a new girl. Boaz asks the foreman of the harvesters, "Whose young woman is that?" He doesn't say, "Who is that?" He says, "Who does she belong to?" The foreman tells him that she came with Naomi, that she'd been working hard all day, And yes, Boaz had heard something of her, but now he can see her with his own eyes. So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field. Don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you're thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars that the men have filled." Now remember, this is at the time of the judges, when everyone did what was right in their own eyes. This was a dangerous time to live. Dangerous time for women, especially women on their own, women with no family. But Boaz comes to her and is kind to her and says, "Stay in this field. Stay here." The word "stay here" is the same. Do you know where Ruth clung to Naomi, didn't want to leave her? It's the same word here, but it's translated "stay." Cling to me and you'll be safe. In a culture where a woman could be abused, she would be safe if she stayed in Boaz's field. This is beyond all expectation. Boaz is reaching beyond the cultural norms. This is not what would normally happen. This is a foreigner invited to enjoy the protection and the provision of a powerful man. She's been invited to drink the water that he provides. Isn't this a picture of Jesus? This is like Jesus who reaches out and invites us into his field, into his kingdom, a place where we find protection and provision. Protection where he is our shepherd, a rock on which to build our lives, a fortress on which to run into. Protection and provision. He leads me beside still waters, into green pastures. He restores my soul. This is a picture of Jesus. Jesus says, "Stay in my field. Stay away from those other fields that's dangerous. Those other fields of greed or selfish ambition. Those fields of idolatry. Stay in this field, for those fields will crush your soul." Jesus says, "Stay in this field where your soul will be restored, refreshed." At this she bowed down with her face to the ground, verse 10. She asked him, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner? What have I done to deserve this?" And isn't that what God does with us? Isn't that what we could say to him? "What have I done to deserve your favor?" It's what the psalmist felt in Psalm 8. "What is man that you are mindful of him? The son of man that you care for him?" That was Isaiah in Isaiah 6 when he saw a vision of God in the temple, seated high and lifted up. And he said, "What have I done to deserve this? I'm just a sinful person and my eyes have seen the Lord of hosts." Or do you remember at the beginning of Jesus' ministry back in Luke chapter 5? Peter had been out fishing all night and Jesus said again, "No, take your boat out into deep water, let down your nets and you'll catch some fish." And he says, "I've been fishing all night, but if you tell me to do it, I'll do it." And so he does. And do you remember he had to get help? The nets were breaking. The nets were so full. And Peter's response is, "What have I done to deserve this? Go away from me, for I'm a sinful man." That was her response to Boaz. "What have I done? Why have I found such favor in your eyes?" Perhaps later on today we could reread that story and just reflect on, what have I done to deserve this? Why would Jesus die for me? Why should I be the recipient of such a gift? Why would you care about me at all? She worshipped. We can too. Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. How you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before." Isn't that what it means to become a Christian? Leave behind everything. And then he prays this beautiful prayer in verse 12. "May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Isn't that beautiful? under whose wings you have come to take refuge. This is a picture of protection. Valerie Carson sent a WhatsApp yesterday. She'd been reading some of the Psalms, and she read Psalm 57. Have mercy on me, O God, have mercy on me, for in you my soul takes refuge. I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings until the disaster has passed. Isn't that beautiful? Under the shelter of his wings. Boaz is a type of Jesus. She had come to shelter under his wings and under the wings of his kingdom and his people. A place of protection and provision. Jesus stood outside Jerusalem, did you remember, not long before he died, and he said, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it, how often I would have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, but you would not let me. Jesus wants to protect us, give us hope, give us a future, change us, better us, lift us up, not live in famine, but live in abundance. So this is a picture of protection, a picture of salvation. This is Moses in the cleft of the rock. This is the blood of the lamb on the doorpost as the angel of death passed over. This is what it means to be a follower of Jesus. This is what this story is all about. Ruth then describes herself as the lowest of the low, at the bottom of the social ladder, for that is where she was. And she's invited by the Master to share his food with him. He, the Master, is serving her. And isn't this Jesus? Isn't this our Lord? Isn't this the servant king? Isn't this Jesus washing the disciples' feet? Isn't this Jesus preparing food for them to eat? Isn't this the Master who serves his people? Boaz speaks to his men and tells them, let her gather as much as she wants from any area of the field she wants to go. And she collects an ephah, 22 liters. That's about 50 pounds of grain. That's quite heavy, isn't it? 50 pound weight. And she carries it back to Naomi. She must have been strong. Normally we would gather up a few grains to do you for a day, but this would have done you for a long time. God is a God of abundance. He doesn't give us little bits. He gives us everything. She heads back to Naomi. Naomi sees it. Circumstances were changing. Naomi asked her where she got so much grain. Her mother-in-law asked her, verse 19, where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. So Ruth tells her that she's working in the field of a man called Boaz. She didn't know who Boaz was, but Naomi does. The Lord bless him, she says. He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. That man is a close relative of ours. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers. Kinsmen redeemer. That expression is really important for the story. And in Jesus, for our whole Christian story, a kinsman, someone who was a relative, next of kin. He's a kinsman redeemer. We will sing at the very end, there is a redeemer. Someone who buys back, who sets us free. He is a kinsman redeemer. That is what he was. So the kinsman redeemer was a male relative who, according to the laws of the Old Testament, had the privilege and had the responsibility to act on behalf of a relative who was in trouble, or in danger, or in need. So if, like Ruth, you were a widow who had no husband and no children, it was responsibility of the next in line in the male to marry the widow and have a child. And that child would become the heir of the deceased man. It was to carry on the family line. That was the responsibility of the next in line. Or if someone had sold their property and because they were in need, it was for the next relative, the nearest relative, to buy back that land so it would not disappear from that family line. Or if someone had sold themselves into slavery because times were hard, it was the responsibility of that relative to buy them back and set them free. So a kinsman redeemer, someone from your family who would have this responsibility of doing what needed to be done to make things okay. Boaz is a possible kinsman redeemer. And as we see the rest of the story, there's someone who's closer, but Boaz is in line. This is Jesus. He is our kinsman redeemer. He is part of our family. Hebrews 2 says this, both the one who makes men holy and those who are made holy are of the same family. So Jesus is not ashamed to call them brothers. This is our Jesus, part of our family. It is his privilege and responsibility to buy us back. That's what he did on the cross. We're enslaved to sin. We have sold ourselves into slavery to sin. We're in trouble. We're in need. We're lost. We need someone to help. Who will help? The kinsman redeemer, Jesus. For Naomi and Ruth, it was Boaz. But he's a picture of the ultimate kinsman redeemer, the ultimate one who would come to our rescue. So the harvest is coming to an end as chapter 2 finishes. So what's going to happen? These women need someone to help. What will they do? Or more importantly, what is God going to do? The story continues.